It was July of 1990 when President George H.W. Bush signed the Americans with Disabilities Act. In the 29 years since, the standard of rights for people living with disabilities has evolved, as have the rules governing those standards. But how does the ADA play out here in western Wisconsin? Are employers playing by the rules? Do they even know what the rules are? Today on the West Side, we talk about what it's like to live with a disability in western Wisconsin. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and welcome to the program today. And we welcome our guest, Catherine Schneider, the Emerita Senior Psychologist in Counseling Services at UW-Eau Claire, and the author of several books about disabilities, including To the Left of Inspiration, Adventures in Living with Disabilities. Catherine Schneider, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Kyle Kleist is the Assistant Director of the Center for Independent Living in western Wisconsin, which is based in Menominee. Kyle Kleist, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Lisa Riley is Options Counselor Supervisor for the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Eau Claire County. Lisa Riley, glad to have you here.
Yes, thank you, Dean.
So later in the show, we'll hear from Jean Kalschur of the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired about an event coming up next month in the Chippewa Valley. As always, you are invited to join the conversation. If you want to share your story about living in western Wisconsin with a disability, or maybe you have a question about how ADA affects you, join us by calling 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Catherine Schneider, let's start with you and spend some time talking with you. You wrote in an article a few years ago in Volume 1 magazine, and here's the quote, "The Americans with Disabilities Act is an amazing piece of civil rights legislation that has immeasurably increased freedom of access to the good things in life for the 19% of us who have disabilities." Can you give us a little perspective on how the ADA has affected your life?
As a person who's blind, there have been lots of good things that have happened because of the ADA. I think a lot of times when people think of ADA, they think of ramps and wheelchair access and all. But there's also good stuff for people who are blind. For example, it's made national the rules about access for people who have service or guide dogs. It's indicated that there should be reasonable access to information in alternate formats. For example, when I'm staying in a hotel, it's really nice to know the numbers on the elevator.
Sure.
Having them in Braille, having the room numbers in Braille, things like that have come forward.
So before your retirement, you spent a number of years as a psychologist for counseling services at UW-Eau Claire. How did life change for students and faculty on campus after ADA?
I think the architectural changes were the most notable changes. The ramps, if a building had an inaccessible second floor, then the classroom could be relocated because of a student's need.
Have you, as a person with a disability, encountered any pushback from people who don't have disabilities from the sorts of accommodations ADA sets forth?
Yeah. Sometimes people are either unaware that they do have to make in public accommodations and public places of entertainment that they do have to make a reasonable accommodation. So I think it's mostly a lack of knowledge. Occasionally people would argue that why should they have to do it because they're small or they're grandfathered in somehow or other that they shouldn't have to do it. But I think mostly it's just people don't know and then we start to make an accommodation somehow on the fly.
Do you think that the visibility that the ADA created for the needs for people with disabilities, do you think that's affected attitudes among other people, what would be called, what the phrase we were talking about a bit earlier, temporarily able-bodied people, does it affect the attitudes that we have toward people with disabilities?
I think we are getting to have a lot better attitudes that a disability is a part of life, and sometimes people have to do things differently because of it, and sometimes other people have to make accommodations, but it's a part of life. I see a lot less of the kind of attitudes of, oh, we just won't talk about it, or we'll whisper when we talk about cancer, or we'll whisper when we talk about dementia. I see a lot less of that and more just taking it as a part of life.
Now, the ADA and its ramifications have evolved through the years to cover more disabilities and more situations. What are some of the most notable changes you've noticed since the passage of the legislation back in 1990?
I think the architectural changes, the ramps. For example, in my neighborhood, there's going to be a flashing beacon, and there are now available beacons that, in addition to flashing, to tell you when it's safe to cross, they also have audible. So we'll probably have a flashing audible and possibly tactile to tell deafblind people when it's safe to cross.
So even in those small situations, that sort of thing can help.
Well, it's a big help.
Well, I was going to say,
it's a big help in a small situation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, things that you could, you know, it's like, oh, crossing the street. Yeah, well, that's simple to do. You look both ways. Oh, yeah. What if you can't look both ways? So, yeah, it's an interesting.
Well, you can listen both ways, but then you don't know when the beacon's flashing to say go.
And you never know if somebody's got a hybrid car. You might not hear that even.
So, right.
This day and age, or a bicycle for that matter. Now, in retirement, you've done some work on disability issues, like helping start awards for children's books and for journalism with disability content. What disability issues are you working on right now?
Right now, I just got done working on the flashing beacon issue, and I look for opportunities to celebrate the accommodations and the accessibility that we do have, because a couple of years ago there was attempts to push back and get rid of the ADA. So I'm always looking around for, okay, how can we highlight what we do have? So having the opportunity to be on a panel like this, that's great.
So you're advocating sort of by celebrating.
Yeah.
Interesting. You've written two memoirs and a children's book about life with disabilities. What did you hope to accomplish, and do you have anything else in the pipeline?
I'm putting my blogs for the last 7 years into a book.
Oh.
I just turned 70, and half of people over 65 will have a disability. And those of us who've been around the block a few times maybe have some tricks of the trade to share, and also just the knowledge that, yeah, you can still have the good life as a senior with a disability.
We'll mention this later in the show, but if people want to access that blog online, how do they find it?
It's Kathy Comments, K-A-T-H-I-E, Comments, WordPress.com.
Got it. What advice would you give to people with new disabilities and their friends about coping and or thriving?
Oh, I could probably take at least 3 hours of your time, but I guess the number one I would say is be patient with yourself, because you're a babe with that new disability, and look for resources, which brings my colleagues into the conversation.
Perfect segue. Let's talk about some of those resources available for people with disabilities here in Western Wisconsin. That's our topic today, by the way, on the West Side. Good to have you with us. 800-228-5615 is the number that you can reach us with your questions, comments, or stories. Lisa Riley, you work for the Aging and Disability Resource Center in Eau Claire County. What is your organization's role in supporting people with disabilities?
Yes, so the role of the Aging and Disability Resource Center is to connect people with disabilities or elders. And when we say people, we work with adults, so 18 to 60 with any sort of disability or over 60. And we get a wide variety of questions. And our job is to know the resources in our community and connect people with those resources and services. So we really try to be experts on seeing what their individual situation is and what they want. Not everyone's goal is the same or situation is the same. So whether someone calls us or stops into the office or we're doing a home visit, we're asking a few questions before we get to some education on what's available in our community, because we want the information we're providing to be useful and personalized for them. So we have a few different roles of connecting people with those services and resources. We have benefit specialists who work with people to connect them with insurance and benefits type questions. We have some adaptive equipment that can help people temporarily get by with some really great, nice gizmos, as Kathy calls them, to be able to do things on their own in their own homes until they can find a permanent one. We also have the nutrition programs at the Aging and Disability Resource Center, most commonly known as Meals on Wheels. And then we also have some prevention programs, some health promotion type workshops that we do. So really a lot of things, but really our goal is whatever the person's goal is. So getting them connected with what they need to live in the community independently or get themselves whatever they need.
Yeah, you supervise the options counselors at ADRC in Eau Claire County. What does an options counselor do?
An options counselor, it's kind of a tough name, but we really do counsel on a person's options. So that's the personalized conversations of asking what they need, where do you currently live, where do you want to live, what do you need in order to make that happen. And then we spend a lot of time making ourselves the experts on the resources that are in our community so that we can connect people with that. So we are doing home visits, conversations on the phone, office visits with three of the adult children, or whatever the situation is. We're really accommodating so that we can know what all the resources are. We've got lots of handouts, but it's more than just the handouts. It's the conversation that goes along with the handout so that we can get them to the right resource.
Sounds like you work a little bit like a reference librarian for disability resources. What's the process for somebody who has a need but just doesn't know where to go to get that need met?
They would start with a conversation with us. Yep, if they called, they would get our resource specialists first. They answer a lot of the incoming questions. And then if they kind of know the process of when it would come to an options counselor. And like I said, we probably have a few questions for the person before we get to the answer, because we want to know the full situation and what their goal is. It's different for everyone. Every person's need is different and their goal is different. And so it could be a private pay, what exists in Eau Claire County that you can pay for to get that need met, or if there isn't the ability to privately pay, how can we get you what you need?
You specifically work with people in Eau Claire County. There are ADRCs that serve every community in the state.
Yes.
Do you have a sense that the resources for people in other parts of Western Wisconsin are significantly different? For instance, would counties that are more rural have fewer resources?
That can be. Yep. So there's two pieces. One is the organic resources that already exist in the community. And so those are very different based on the community. So if someone lives in Chippewa County and comes to me, I'm not really going to know about Chippewa County, but that's a good thing, because I'm the expert in Eau Claire County. Their ADRC is the expert in their county. There are some things that would be consistent statewide, and that's the long-term care programs. And that's a whole separate conversation. That's when you need help and you don't have the ability to pay for it. We're doing the eligibility and enrollment into those programs, and that is consistent statewide. But there are things like I've heard of other counties that don't have an assisted living facility in their whole county. So, you know, some of the northern counties, and not just northern counties, but just as an example, sometimes they do have fewer resources. And so people need to move to communities that do have those resources, transportation resources, housing. They are all different based on where you live.
Mm-hmm. What are the most what are the biggest and most difficult challenges you're hearing from people who come to the Aging and Disability Resource Center for help and advice?
The first thing that comes to mind is housing, is low cost and accessible housing. There seems to be more need of it than the resource exists. And so that can be challenging. Sometimes that is a We're offering the information about what currently exists, but we don't have, you know, we wish we could have apartment keys to give everyone that comes in our door. That would just be, that would be amazing. But so housing is, tends to be a long-term issue. As long as I can remember the last few years, that's a pretty common question that we get and a tough avenue.
Housing's a big issue here in Western Wisconsin. We've done two shows, and it wasn't intended to be that way. We've done two shows in the past few months. Back in May, we did a show about the fact that more people are renting than used to, and you know, discovered that one of the reasons is access, and even it's difficult to access a rental property. But you know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about housing insecurity and the fact that the availability of places to live is not as easy to come by as it has traditionally been in the past. And that's a good segue to our third guest for the hour, another resource in our area for people with disabilities, the Center for Independent Living, Western Wisconsin. Kyle Kleist is the organization's assistant director. What, Kyle, is the Center for Independent Living and who does it serve?
Great question. Center for Independent Living is a nonprofit organization. So we're one of eight independent living centers here in the state of Wisconsin, each serving a specific geographic area. Our center serves, let me see, name these all, Barron, Chippewa, Clark, Dunn, Eau Claire, Pierce, Pepin, Polk, Rusk, and St. Croix.
You did it.
So, yes. And so what we do is our mission is to advocate for full participation in society for individuals with disabilities. We have our five core services that are mandated by the federal government. So we are under the Workforce Investment Opportunity Act, and those are advocacy. So we advocate for people with disabilities, could be systems change, individual advocacy issues. Information and referral. So we want to be a resource. Anybody that's looking for information, resources on disability, give us a call. If we don't have the answer, we'll look for it. Independent living skills training, which really encompasses working with individuals to find the resources. A lot of it is a lot of what we call adaptive technology to help people just live more independently. Peer support, which goes to, like you were talking about earlier with Kathy, people that are newly disabled, but matching up individuals with disabilities that have life experience, you might say, to assist people in you know, that process of dealing with their disability.
I would think that would be particularly effective.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I myself have probably done peer support with four or five men with spinal cord injuries like myself that use wheelchairs. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity. Plus, we do some group activities. Angie Brenna is our peer support coordinator and, you know, works a lot with that program. And then our new fifth core service is transition. So that's working with transitioning people out of institutions, maybe nursing homes, into living more independently, diverting people from going into institutions, working with youth that are transitioning into adulthood, and also working with people that have been involved in jails or prisons to help them transition into the community.
Very good. Well, it's time for a break. We are talking about living with a disability here in Western Wisconsin and the resources available to those affected. The guests stay with us. The one you just heard, Kyle Kleist from the Center for Independent Living Western Wisconsin in Menominee. Lisa Riley is also with us. She's with the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Eau Claire County. And psychologist and author Catherine Schneider of Eau Claire joins us as well. Join us with your stories, questions, or comments at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. After the break, producer Clara Neipert brings us her interview about a low vision fair coming to the Chippewa Valley next month. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Our topic today is living with disabilities in Western Wisconsin, and we'll continue our live discussion with our guests in a moment. But first, we'll take some time to learn about an event coming to our area next month that's designed to bring members of the blind and visually impaired community together to learn. Producer Clara Neipert spoke with Jean Kalscher, who is the education coordinator for the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired, about what to expect if you attend the Low Vision Fair.
The Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired is a not-for-profit agency, And our mission is to promote the dignity and empowerment of people in Wisconsin who are blind and visually impaired. And we do that in three ways. We do provide services to individuals, like low vision services, vision rehabilitation, assistive technology services. And that's done more in the Madison area and the counties around Dane, because that's where we're physically located. But on the statewide piece, we advocate legislation. So we have a legislative agenda every 2 years. And we also do a lot of education for both the general public and for people who are blind or visually impaired. Each year, one of our efforts for statewide outreach is to do a low vision fair in a different part of the state. And so last year it was in Manitowoc. And I think this is our fifth one. Fifth.
What was the inspiration then for starting these low vision fairs?
They started for a couple reasons. One is that often people don't have a way to find out about either services or products or information about low vision easily. Even though there's a lot of people who have low vision, most of those people are older adults, and so there's not kind of a one-place stop for information in many areas. And so that was one of the reasons that we started. It was to provide educational programming to help people become aware of what's available in their local area in terms of both services and then where products can be found that might be helpful to them. Because you can't go to the mall and find a portable closed caption television, for example. You need to go to a specialty place to do that. You know, so it's to help people become aware of what's out there that can be useful for them.
I saw that there will be speakers at the event. What topics will they cover?
Yeah, we have four educational breakout sessions. One of those sessions is going to be Genesis Linbo from the Center for Independent Living of Western Wisconsin, which is located in Menominee. She is going to talk about smartphones and their apps, and then also a little bit about smart speakers. And so a smart speaker is like the Amazon Echo or Hey Google or Apple Siri. And then Al Thompson, who is with the Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and Al works out of the Eau Claire office and covers a number of counties in that area. Al is going to talk about the connection between vision and balance, and some strategies that can reduce the risk of falls, whether at home or in the community. And then Jim Denham from our office here is going to talk about making that transition from using your computer just to make things bigger to magnify. At what point do you start adding audio in, and how can you start adding audio feedback into using a computer? And then the last speaker will be me, and I'll be talking about lighting and different types of light bulbs and how you choose a light bulb and a little bit about lighting fixtures and how to position those so that they're most useful for somebody who is blind or visually impaired.
Why is next month's Low Vision Fair important for the blind and visually impaired community?
Well, I think it's important because it gives people a chance to meet other people who are blind or visually impaired. And sometimes that's difficult to do because many people with low vision are not recognizable. So they're not wearing white canes or using white canes. They're not wearing dark glasses. They're just regular people in the community. And so it's often hard for people to know that there's a lot of other people out there like them. And so it gives them a chance to just meet others, hear other people's stories, and it also gives them a chance to meet any service providers from their area that they might want to connect with. So, for example, we do have the Office for the Blind and Visually Impaired, who are one of the exhibitors. We have Stout's Vocational Rehabilitation Program, which is one of the exhibitors. We have the Office for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing, since that is often an accompanying impairment for older adults. So it gives them a chance to talk with service providers and then also to see some of the different devices, both low and high tech, that might be helpful for them.
What value is there for sighted people who attend the event?
Well, I think particularly for family members of people who have vision impairment, it helps them to see some of the things that their family member might be able to learn to do, how they might help that individual be more independent in their daily life. It also gives them the information to help reinforce that learning by the person who is visually impaired, so that there's just another set of ears that's there. But I think mostly it's for them to be able to kind of immerse themselves also in services for people who are blind and visually impaired in order to support their family member or friend or spouse.
Finally, how can someone find out more information about this event?
Well, if anybody wants more information, they are welcome to get in touch with me, and they can send me an email at jkelscher@wcblind.org. They can also give a call at 608-237-8106. They can also look on the council's website, which is at wcblind.org. And under the events tab, they can read about the Low Vision Fair with a listing of the different vendors who are going to be there. And then we also will have up there all of the different breakout sessions.
The Low Vision Fair goes from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on August 19th. It will be at the Business Education Center on the Chippewa Valley Technical College campus in Eau Claire. The event is free and open to the public. We're talking about, we're celebrating to some extent and commemorating the 29th anniversary this month of the Americans with Disabilities Act by talking about what it's like to live in Western Wisconsin with a disability. And we have three great guests here in the studio with us. Lisa Riley is an options counselor supervisor for the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Eau Claire County. Catherine Schneider is the author of several books about disabilities, including To the Left of Inspiration, Adventures in Living with Disabilities. And Kyle Kleist is the assistant director of the Center for Independent Living Western Wisconsin, which is in Menominee. And we invite you to join the conversation at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. We do have a caller on the line. It's Vern from Boyd. Vern, welcome to the program. Sorry, Vern. Now welcome to the program. I missed a button.
I did?
No, I did. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll try to be real quick on a summary.
Thank
you. As to lighting, we need halogen light bulbs. We can see better. Okay. If you watch a computer, it's going to make your vision worse, not better. Now, as to housing, we have all these artificial housing rules since 1980 where you can't afford to build housing. They need to build housing like in rural areas, specifically for disabled people. Now, one thing I came up with was a refrigerator you mount on a counter where you can put your wheelchair under the counter so you can access your food and stuff directly. And that's one idea. But another thing is you got to make shoes so when you walk on ice in the wintertime, you don't slide or slip, because when you get out of the car, it's the most likely spot. But they used to make rubber shoes where you won't slip on the ice. But like I said, try to get disability through the VA or through the Social Security system. It's almost impossible. Without resources, and see, I'd rather live with my relatives, but if you pay them, then they count your income as their income, so then they can't get their benefits, whatever you want to call it. So it's the system fights you tooth and nail every inch of the way. But, I don't want some supervisor telling me how to live. I'd rather live with my relatives and let them be paid. And like I said, we got to change these housing rules. I've told Ron Kindness, I've told Baldwin and all of them, we got to make it so we can build affordable houses with all these artificial rules.
Vern, thank you. Lots of things there. Lisa Riley, Vern hinted at the fact that sometimes the bureaucracy is pretty tough to handle.
Well, yeah, the reality is, I guess there's a few different players that make all of the rules, and there is a lot of different topics in there, and I think that we would be able to, in a conversation, parcel out some of those things. I agree that there should be more housing and in rural areas, and that's one of those things where we have the idea of, yes, it should happen, and how do we get from A to Z? I agree with you there, and I do want to share that there's an awesome shoe adaptation for wintertime, Vern. It's called Yak Tracks. We do have those in our loan closet, I believe, for people to try out, and they're pretty affordable also. You can just buy, and they snap around your shoes for the wintertime. And yes, preventing falls in the wintertime is a very, very good idea for those with disabilities and elders. That will prevent a lot of other need for help.
And we are talking about, you know, finding ways for people with disabilities to live an independent life, and Kyle Kleiss, that's what your organization, the Center for Independent Living, is all about. As we think back on the progress that we've had because of the ADA, there has been legislation since that has modified the ADA to some extent. How is that affecting the ability for you to do your job?
Well, I mean, it really affects individuals with disabilities. Talking about the America with Disabilities Act Amendment Act that was signed by George W. Bush in 2008. So what had happened was, in the 15 years since passage of the ADA, the courts had whittled down the definition, so to speak, of who qualified as an individual with a disability. So Congress acted and kind of helped to clarify the definition of disability and who qualified, and really helped to strengthen the ADA in many ways. So, but, you know, we're coming up on celebrating almost 30 years of the ADA, but there still are some architectural issues out there, especially under Title III when we look at public access to goods and services. So, you know, that continues to be a struggle. Things have gotten a lot better, especially with new construction, as Catherine talked about. You know, but the other barrier is really that tough nut to crack for individuals with disabilities is Title I when it comes to employment. 30 years after the ADA, I mean, we've really not seen any significant increase in the number of individuals with disabilities that are competitively employed. So that's something that we still need to work on. Even in this labor market, things have gotten better, I'll admit that. But, boy, when unemployment starts to go up, I mean, that really does directly affect individuals with disabilities.
Well, and we are in a period of very low unemployment in western Wisconsin and around the nation. Kathy Schneider, does that make it easier for a person with disabilities to get the income needed to live independently?
Sometimes it has, but as Kyle mentioned, last hired, first fired is often also true. And another barrier that affects employment as well as other things is information access. For example, if the computer program that a company uses is not fully accessible to those of us who are blind and use screen readers, then that's a barrier that needs to be worked on.
Well, another barrier is really when it comes to their health insurance. So, I mean, as you could talk about, I mean, with the benefits option counselors look at helping people to identify, you know, when it comes to at risk of losing your health insurance and really find an employer that does have good health insurance. That is always a major barrier for people with disabilities at risk of losing their health insurance. We have the Medicaid buy-in program and other options like that here in Wisconsin. But, you know, when it comes to going off your benefits and accessing full-time employment, one of the big issues for people with disabilities is making sure that they have good health insurance with that new employer.
Now, Lisa Riley, with the low unemployment rate, we see many businesses advertising. You don't have to drive very far down Claremont Avenue to see people advertising that they're hiring. Have the agencies you work with had trouble getting workers?
Yes. If you're speaking as far as caregivers, is
right.
That, yes, absolutely. That is one of the other things I was going to say as a barrier along with housing is, and this is a statewide issue, is let's say you need help with X, Y, and Z in order to live in your apartment. There is actually difficulty. You know, we can connect people to these home care agencies that can do that. But one of the questions we coach people on when they're asking the agency is, does your agency have the staffing to meet my needs? So these caregiver positions are not not fancy or highly paid, but they're really important jobs. And so we really do need people, we need caregivers that can take care of folks with disabilities and elders. And sometimes just finding the workers has been a problem.
Mm-hmm. Does that affect some of your recommendations? I mean, I know your recommend they ask, but are there, you know, does it change your mind as far as where you steer people sometimes because of this ability, this difficulty for some of the agencies you work with to find caregivers in this market?
It can, and it can change the conversation a bit so that we're having a plan A and a plan B and a plan C for folks so that we're sending them on their way with some good information that's really going to get them somewhere and get some help. And sometimes we really need their natural supports to work. So,
about what a natural support is.
Yeah, so if we can encourage someone to put up sign up at church and see if someone is able to do that for them for $12 an hour versus paying an agency to cut their lawn, that can be a lot more affordable, and it can be kind of just a natural support in their own environment.
Yeah, she's absolutely right. One of the things, I mean, Wisconsin, people don't realize, is facing a personal care crisis, especially in our rural areas. There are just not going to be enough personal care workers out there to assist. I mean, our agency, we have our personal assistance services, throw that in there, but we do personal care, home care, respite, and mentoring, and finding individuals to do that job in this market is very difficult. I mean, I am so thankful that our new budget providing an increase for personal care workers, but still, these people are not paid as well as what they should be for the work that they do. And in order for people with disabilities to be able to live independently in their community, they need access to long-term support services.
What's it like to live with a disability in Western Wisconsin? That's our topic. We're exploring this hour with our guests, Lisa Riley of the Eau Claire Aging and Disability Resource Center, advocate and author Catherine Schneider of Eau Claire, and Kyle Kleist with the Center for Independent Living Western Wisconsin, based in Menominee. Still time for your comment, question, or story. Join us at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're talking about what it's like to live with a disability in Western Wisconsin with our guests. Let's move to the area of intellectual disabilities, if we can. And we've got a few things to move through, some topics we want to get to before the hour ends up. The category of intellectual disabilities is one that's also evolved as our understanding of things like autism and brain injuries has grown. Kathy Schneider, what have we learned about that area that helped those individuals dealing with intellectual disabilities make their way in society?
I think we've learned something that's kind of common sense, but we have to keep learning it, which is each individual is different, and that's the great wonderful thing about services like the ADRC and the Center for Independent Living. They work with individuals because we no longer think, well, this is best for those people. We've gotten to the point where we realize you really need to talk to that person and other people in their family or people who care about them to figure out what services, what are the goals for that person, rather than just assuming that those people go here.
We've got a call from Margie in Chippewa Falls. Margie, welcome to the West Side. Go ahead.
My daughter, 55-year-old daughter, had a stroke 2 months ago, and now her Blue Cross Blue Shield, where she was working, has quit paying, and so she can't even pay for her eye doctors and stuff, and she's got kicked out of the nursing home, and she's into the low-income housing here in Chippewa Falls. But she has no money for food or lights or phone or nothing. She's just totally destitute and has no car, and she can't work. She went to a neurologist just this past week, and the neurologist will not clear her to work, and she can't. I mean, my daughter thinks she's going to get better and be able to go to work, and I'm sorry, but you know, she's manic depressive also, and so nobody wants to tell her that's never going to happen. But how does she get food share? And ADRC says she has to go to the courthouse. And for that, why doesn't somebody, is there no person, no organization, no lawyers, whatever, that can help her get what she needs? She was told that the disability would kick in November. Until then, how does she survive?
Lisa Riley, why don't you start this? I would imagine this is a conversation you've had many times.
Yes, absolutely.
Something similar, not the same. But
Yeah, and I'm so sorry to hear that your daughter is in such a tough spot. I hope that, you know, this hopefully could be the worst of it, and some things could move forward. And so it sounds like you say disability will kick in. So I'm thinking that means she has been approved for disability income, maybe. But, you know, the folks from the Chippewa ADRC can do a home visit with her. So I would encourage you to reach out. She can just call and they can set up a time to come see her and tell you, at least over the phone, how to apply for food share. That they can do that over the phone. So there are ways to connect her with that. But it is sometimes hard when we have folks where there isn't, you know, we can connect people to the resources that exist. It's difficult when there is a lapse in time of when things kick in. You know, we are also trying to work in the big system of what exists and the timelines that have been set for us to follow. But, you know, certainly reach out to the Eau Claire or Chippewa County folks.
Yes, and I would encourage you, you can reach out to our center, the Center for Independent Living for Western Wisconsin. We have our independent living staff. We're free of charge, so they will come and meet with you in your home. But try to help some identify some of the resources you might need. But you spoke about her disability, neurological as well. So there might be some adaptive things in the home that we could provide to assist your daughter in living more independently. And regardless of whether you think she could work or not, I would still encourage you to reach out to the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation and have her apply and to see what they can do to assist her with getting employed.
Thank you, Margie. Let's move now to Mary in Menominee. Mary, thank you for calling the West Side.
Hi. I moved to this area from Racine about 21 years ago, and the people in this area have been such a great help. I live rurally, independently. It's not easy, but with the help from friends, this area has been a great area for me to live in, and I just wanted to say thank you so much.
Well, that's nice to hear. I would imagine Kyle Kleist and Lisa Riley in particular.
Oh, absolutely. It's nice to hear when people are out there living independently and being a nice part of their community. That's what it's all about.
Kyle Kleist, the Center for Independent Living in Western Wisconsin serves a 10-county area, much of which is rural in nature. How important is the role of transportation when it comes to living independently for people with disabilities?
Oh, it's one of the key things that allow people to live independently. I mean, we're fortunate. We have a New Freedom Transportation Program, which operates in all 10 counties, but now in 29 counties, or 27 counties in Wisconsin. It's a volunteer driver program. So we don't duplicate services. So let's say like Chippewa has a shared ride, Eau Claire has Abbey vans, but outside in the rural areas, what we do is we work with individuals. We'll help provide them with using our volunteer drivers, get them transportation to medical appointments. But not just medical. We like to do social, recreational, those kind of things as well. So we work a lot with different counties and their 8521 or Elderly and Disabled Transportation Funding. So it's a great effort, coordinated effort, working with many people. But in a lot of areas where people do not have access to transportation, it's huge, especially without transportation, you can't get a job. Without transportation, you can't get a medical appointment. You can't be part of your community.
Now, another area that we've had this advance in technology over the last several years, stuff you couldn't have thought of when the ADA was invented or was signed in 1990. Kathy Schneider, you're very active on social media. You even have a blog. As a blind person, what are the challenges and possibilities that our wired world has brought to your life?
The opportunities are huge. Being able to read newspapers, magazines, Facebook, etc., online is great. but it's also an area where individuals can make a big difference. Next time you Facebook a picture, instead of saying, wow, look at this, you can just Facebook, wow, look at this cat.
Sure.
So, I can't see the picture. My screen reader can't read the picture. But at the same time, I at least know what you're going gaga about.
Yeah, and it's still a cat. Earlier this month, Governor Evers signed into law a bill that would ease the process of getting a license for a sign language interpreter. Lisa Riley, do you think that's filling a need here in western Wisconsin?
Yes, certainly. There's a number of people who need access to that.
And Kathy Schneider, you had something to say on that matter?
Another great thing about the bill, more deaf people will be involved with the regulation of interpreter services, as I understand it. And also, in some situations, there may be a deaf interpreter that works directly with a person who doesn't know a lot of sign language, and then another interpreter would work with the hearing people that need to be worked with in a particular situation. So deaf interpreters, there again, we're more realizing that one size doesn't fit all.
Yeah. And dealing with the interpreter issues for those are right across the border from Minnesota. So we have our independent living center in La Crosse and the one up in Superior. A lot of them, when they're getting interpreters, those interpreters are coming from Minnesota, not from Wisconsin. So that can create a barrier sometimes as well.
So, Catherine Schneider, we kicked off this conversation talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is celebrating its 29th anniversary this month. You've written a poem to honor the occasion. Would you care to share that with us?
I have. It's kind of unusual to write a poem about a law, but it's that important to those of us with disabilities. It's called An Anthem for the ADA Anniversary. You can talk about me instead of to me. You can question my right to be. You can pity and disrespect me and ignore my needs. I didn't see. And still, we'll rise. I'm your grandma who doesn't hear. I'm your friend living with anxiety and fear. I'm your grandpa who has lost his mind, or his wife who is going blind. And still, we'll rise. We're one out of five. We're not dead yet, still alive. Our needs aren't special, they just are. A parking space that's not too far, a friend who listens even if it takes longer, and fights for access with us. Together we're stronger, and still we'll rise. We won't stop until all can play, work, love, and pray in whatever way. So celebrate with us, because of the ADA and caring people, all can say, together, we'll all rise.
And that, it seems, is a perfect way for us to wrap up today's program. Catherine Schneider is an emerita senior psychologist in counseling services at UW-Eau Claire and author of several books on disabilities. She also blogs at kathycomments.wordpress.com, and that's Kathy spelled with a K at the start and an IE at the end. We've also been joined by Kyle Kleist of the Center for Independent Living Western Wisconsin, based in Menominee, and Lisa Riley of the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Eau Claire. Thanks to Clara Neipert for producing today's show and for Mort Cypress for on-air production, and thanks to Ali Schulze for publicity. Next week, we dive into the topic of broadband. It's a hot political topic, but for many in rural areas of western Wisconsin, reliable internet is still a dream. We'll explore the political and practical angles of the broadband issue next week at this time. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. You've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.